the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says, time flies like the wind. I know that's right. And fruit flies like a banana.
That's just stupid.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
Oh, I like
this. Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, this is big.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Of course.
You might be quizzed.
Hey, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1949. These Are My Children. The first television daytime soap opera was broadcast by NBC in Chicago from their studios high atop the Merchandise Mart downtown. And it was on this day in 1958, right during the heat of the Cold War, the first successful American satellite detected the Van Allen radiation belt. Wasn't Van Allen that guy that starred in 30 Seconds Over Tokyo and Brigadoon?
You need serious, serious help.
Well, despite all the attempts to stop him, and they are many, Donald Trump is surging. I mean, really surging. The prediction market, known as Polymarket, is giving Trump a 94% chance to win the GOP primary. And there's nothing hard to believe about that if you've been watching things. And a 55% chance of winning the election over Joe Biden. But we still have to work under the assumption at this point that Joe Biden is going to be the Democrat nominee. Now, earlier, a few days back on many of these same podcasts, I mentioned that there is this plan to put in Michelle Obama. Now, you have to ask yourself, do you believe the Democrat Party is really going to just go ahead and run Joe Biden again? I don't see them doing that. I really don't. I mean, it would be almost suicide for the party because the Democrats want to win in November. And I think they know at this point, they know unequivocally that Joe Biden can't win. He can't win against Donald Trump. Somebody somewhere within that huge organization known as the Democrat Party understands this. So they're busy about the task of preventing Donald Trump from winning. In fact, they're still trying to prevent him from even qualifying to run. But all those attempts, I'm afraid, are for naught. They're not going to be able to successfully pull that off. So anyhow, Breitbart just reported recently, Polymarket, which describes itself as the world's largest prediction market, is giving former President Trump a 94% chance of becoming the Republican nominee for president as of Monday afternoon. Now, a snapshot of the 2024 election, forecast Monday afternoon, showed a 94% chance of Trump becoming the Republican nominee. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley only garnered 4%, while another 3% said other. 1% each went to entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, both of whom have dropped out of the primary race and backed Trump. Interestingly, there's more confidence that Trump will be the GOP nominee than that President Joe Biden will be the Democrat nominee, as the latter garners 85%, followed by 6% for California Governor Gavin Newsom and 5% for former First Lady Michelle Obama. Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota sees 3% support, and Vice President Kamala Harris garners 2% in the current predictions. And I think that's the key phrase right there, current predictions. Because over the next few months, these predictions will change, I assure you. Now, the predictions don't end there, according to Breitbart. While the forecast currently has an 82% chance of Biden and Trump facing off, 55% believe Trump would win the 2024 presidential race, followed by 39% for Biden, 2% for Newsom, 1% for Haley, and 1% for RFK Jr. I think another barometer that we should start paying attention to is Snoop Dogg has come out endorsing Donald Trump. He's showing Donald Trump the love, big time. Snoop Dogg. And you might laugh, but he's a very influential personality. And in his case, might even be influencing just the right people. I mean, could it be that Donald Trump will indeed end up with the youth vote? Well, look at the youth. Look where they're stuck right now. Having to pay off college loans. They're subsisting on jobs that are only paying enough to allow them to live at home with mom and dad. Gen Zers aren't doing very well. Of course, it doesn't help them that they don't seem to have much of a work ethic either. But that's an entirely different topic. When I look back on the opportunities I had when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, back in the 1960s, and I look at what kids today are having to grapple with, I would never in a million years want to trade places with them. Times were far better when I was a teenager. And when I was a teenager, those were back in the days when we kept talking about spiraling inflation. LBJ was the president, and the economy sucked. It truly sucked. The only time the Democrats held the White House where the economy didn't truly suck was under Bill Clinton. Every other time, the economy sucked under Democrats. It also wasn't doing all that great under Richard Nixon either. I got to give you that. But if you want a solid economy, you are far better off voting Republican for a president. Because just look at the track record. The economy always sucked under Democrats. You can go back and look at the Great Depression, and yeah, Herbert Hoover wasn't all that good. And in fact, it was Herbert. I try to remember that blooper that the late great Harry Von Zell, radio announcer, introduced Herbert Hoover one time as, "Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Hubert Hoover." But yeah, Herbert Hoover, took a Herbert Hoover to get an FDR. But when I look back at how the administration under FDR handled the Great Depression, on the surface, it looked like he did some really good things. And he did. I mean, the electrification of the South with the TVA, that was a stroke of real genius. But that was already set in motion before he became president. He just greased the wheels to make sure that it happened. But what we really should have done as a nation when the Great Depression hit was we should have just gotten the government to keep hands off and just said, look, free enterprise, do what you do best. Invent, innovate, make things happen. But you see, the government was there pulling the strings, making the regulations, creating departments. You had the CCC, which was the Civilian Conservation Corps. You had the NRA, which was not the National Rifle Association. That was the National Relief Act, which was basically ramping up welfare. And they had a lot of government-created jobs for people to do. And I have to make this concession. To a certain degree, that worked. It put a lot of people to work who otherwise wouldn't have had jobs. But it also served to prolong the Depression. I mean, the stock market crash happened on October 29th of 1929, and we really didn't start to feel like we were crawling out of the Depression until about late 1938. And then things really started to look a lot better. And then, of course, in December of 41, we ended up with World War II up our noses. But never, never underestimate the inventive, creative qualities of the United States of America. Still the greatest country in the world. Doesn't look like it these days because Joe Biden and the puppet master, Barack Obama have been doing anything and everything they can to destroy the country. And they're getting a lot of help from people like George Soros and his son. I don't know if you've heard George Soros' son, Alex, speak lately, but he is more inarticulate than Caroline Kennedy. It is embarrassing. So the Soros fortune, I would be willing to bet you, is going to end up withering away. Because Alex is all they've got, and he is a very dim bulb. But as far as the prospects for November, at this point, with what we have to work with right now, it looks like Donald J. Trump is the next president. Well, with the nation's eye, if not the world's eye, on November, Texas Republican Party Chair Matt Rinaldi announced his endorsement of former President Trump. And he wrote on X, while party officials should remain neutral in primaries, absent extraordinary circumstances, the threat our nation faces from Democrats, globalists, and fake Republicans that hand power to Democrats is truly extraordinary. We need everyone in this fight. Now, the Texas Republican primary is scheduled to take place March 5th, also known as Super Tuesday. And a recent poll on the Texas GOP primary released by Emerson College on January 18th found President Trump polling at 69% among likely voters, with former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley finishing with 11% support. Meanwhile, 7% of the respondents supported Ron DeSantis, who of course is now out of the race, while 9% were undecided. And Frank Fang, writing for the Epoch Times, said that Texas Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick have both endorsed Trump, as well as Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz. Now, many House lawmakers from Texas have also chosen to endorse Trump, including Representatives Jody Arrington, August Pfluger, Monica Dela Cruz, Keith Self, and Lance Gooden. Looks like it's almost unanimous. But then why wouldn't it be? Look at the fight being fought right now at Shelby Park in Eagle Pass, Texas. Given the fight that's being fought down there right now, I think it's probably pretty safe to say that at some point in the future, Shelby Park is going to become treasured sites for history buffs. Kind of like, Little Bighorn. Anyhow, following Trump's victory in New Hampshire, you had some GOP lawmakers who started calling on Republicans to unite behind Trump. And last week, Ted Cruz predicted that Ms. Haley would lose the South Carolina primary, which is on February 3rd, and then drop out of the race soon after. So things are falling into place. In an open letter dated January 25th, more than 40 Republican county chairs in Texas announced their endorsement of Trump. You know, as Texas goes, so goes the nation, or at least it should. So the county chairs wrote, "It's our considered judgment that the GOP primary for president is now over. We believe it's now time for all Republicans to unify behind our nominee. There's no time to waste. Too much is at stake." And this is, you know, normally you would read something like that and just kind of write that off as rhetoric. But it's way more than rhetorical these days. It is reality. It's the reality that is facing us. Because right now, our country on a daily basis is being destroyed by the Biden administration and the Obama administration. Because the Obama administration is still in place. Make no mistake about that. Now, in recent days, two more senators, you had John Kennedy, I love that guy, from Louisiana, and Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia announced their endorsement of Trump. And currently, Trump has received endorsements from more than 30 senators. And according to the latest national poll from the Morning Consult, Trump led President Biden by 2 percentage points, or 44% to 42%. The poll surveyed 6,487 registered voters from January 26th to the 28th. And I would really like to have a chance to talk to these idiots who are solidly behind Biden. I just want to know what the hell is wrong with them. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that we're on the threshold of World War III. In fact, in some respects, you can look at the world currently and actually say we are in World War III. Yeah, that's a little bit of a stretch. But seriously, we have war right now raging in the Middle East. We have war in Europe, you know, with the Russia-Ukraine thing. And then, of course, we have the problem with China getting ready to pounce on Taiwan. Yeah. If you want to stretch the meaning of the term a little bit, you could say that we're already in World War III. But President Trump issued a very, very stark warning, and it's resonating with a lot of Americans, cautioning that the United States stands on the brink of World War III, and this particular statement comes in the wake of a devastating suicide drone strike in Jordan, which resulted in the deaths of those three U.S. service members. Now, the attack also left 8 critically injured and another 34 treated for injuries, and it's been attributed to Iran-backed terrorists, highlighting the escalating tensions in the Middle East. And make no mistake about it, they are escalating, because that's what they do. The Middle East has been at war almost through its entire world history. For some reason, they can't stop fighting. And it takes outside forces like us sometimes to try to bring some semblance of sanity to that world. Now, Trump's criticism of Joe Biden and his handling of foreign policies, both pretty severe and direct. He attributes this latest act of aggression to what he describes as Biden's weakness, suggesting that the current approach has emboldened America's adversaries. And it has. There's no arguing that, really. The former president's comments reflect an increasing concern among conservatives that the current administration's strategies are failing to deter hostile actions against U.S. interests abroad. And U.S. interests, of course, when you use that term, that also includes the interests of our allies. Now, the Pentagon's confirmation of the casualties only intensified calls for a stronger response. Now, Lindsey Graham, I run hot and cold on this guy. There are times when I just love the man, and there are times when I just want to kick him right in the keister. This time around, though, he's been vocal in urging the Biden administration to take what he calls decisive action against Iran. Well, we're way past that point. We should have done it a long time ago. So Graham advocates for striking important targets within Iran. That's a name that doesn't exactly flow past the lips, does it? Anyhow, in his remarks, Graham was stressing not merely as retribution, but as a necessary measure to prevent further aggression. So his stance seems to be pretty clear. Force is the only language that the Iranian regime understands. And without a tangible cost to their infrastructure and personnel, attacks on U.S. troops are going to persist. Now, understand that Iran has been a pain in the world's butt ever since 1979. With the Iranian Revolution there, the Islamic Revolution. And I'm not slamming the Islamic faith, although I could make some cases against it. Ever since Islam took over Iran, Iran has been a miserable, miserable nation and has been a miserable pain in the world's butt. Now, the situation in the Middle East, as I speak, continues to deteriorate. It is going down the tubes with ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas terrorists in Gaza, Iran engaging in an exchange of airstrikes with Pakistan, a key U.S. ally, by the way. Let's not forget that. Pakistan is our friend. And House Foreign Affairs Chairman Michael McCaul also criticized the Biden administration for a perceived weakness that's eroding U.S. deterrence throughout the entire region. And he called for a major reset of Middle East policy to safeguard national security interests and restore the deterrence that has since been lost. Now, Biden, speaking at a church in Columbia, South Carolina, you might have caught this, but he acknowledged the gravity of the situation, saying that the U.S. shall respond to the Iranian drone strike. But the administration's approach so far has been met with skepticism by anyone and everyone who believe a more robust stance is certainly in order to confront the challenges posed by Iran and its proxies. Iran is angry with the world, and they're not afraid to show it, and they are lashing out. Iran's involvement in regional conflicts, of course, is very well documented with its Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, their Quds Force, openly supporting terrorist organizations across the Middle East. So the use of proxy groups, and that's how they get away with this, that allows Iran to maintain deniability and shield itself from accountability for its destabilizing activities. And this tactic has only added to the complexity of addressing the threats emanating from Tehran. Now, in his statement, Trump expressed his deepest sympathies to the families, and he meant every word of it. He reiterated the need for a return to a policy of peace through strength, arguing that chaos, destruction, and the loss of American lives is just going to continue without a change in leadership. We all know that. That's a given. So Trump's message is pretty clear. No hidden meanings there. The country can't endure with the current foreign policy direction. So the world is waiting on us. I don't know if you know that, but the rest of the world is looking to us to do something. And the question remains whether the Biden administration is going to heed the warnings and adjust its strategy. I doubt they will. I think Biden is just buying time. I mean, when you consider the specter of a global conflict looming, the fact that we are indeed on the threshold of World War III, the decisions made in just the coming days could have some pretty profound implications for international peace and security. Somebody explain to me, please, what the hell is going on here? Just days after UAW Union President Sean Fain said that the organization was formally endorsing President Joe Biden's re-election, he dropped a bombshell during a live Fox News segment about the preferred candidate for most members of the UAW, and he appeared to suggest that it was going to be Donald Trump. Now, after Fain fielded some questions about the slumping sales of electric vehicles and how that could affect the union labor force moving forward, Neil Cavuto noted that in past decades, sizable numbers of UAW members supported President Ronald Reagan and his successor, George H.W. Bush, as well as other Republican presidents through the years. And then Cavuto went on to point out that several UAW members were supportive of Trump in 2016 and 2020 and remain supportive of him now, before asking Fain how he felt about that. So, I don't know much about this guy Fain, but he appears to be a complete and utter idiot. But he said, well, look, it's democracy in action. Let me be clear about this. A great majority of our members will not vote for President Biden. Yeah, some will, but that's the reality of this. The majority of our members are going to vote their paychecks. They're going to vote for an economy that works for them. Well, then why in the hell did the union endorse Joe Biden? Is there something that we're just not comprehending here, or what? And while Fain didn't say that the great majority would be voting for Trump, that was the impression he gave, since Cavuto had just mentioned past UAW rank and file support for previous Republican presidents. Now, over the past few decades, political scientists and other experts have noted a shift in voting demographics between Democrats and Republicans, with the latter gaining much more support from the American working class, which had, for the better part of the 20th century, gone overwhelmingly for Democrats. And I think something I spoke about earlier in the blogcast, and that is the Great Depression had a lot to do with that. I mean, FDR gets the credit for fixing. He didn't really fix the Great Depression. He manipulated it. For the most part, in a positive sense, yes. But the Democrats get the credit for that. But now we're talking about something that happened 90 years ago. So the Liberal Patriot, which is an internet publication, they wrote, "The same pattern of Republican domination of the working class vote appears to be developing as we move toward 2024. The latest poll, for which an overall college-non-college split is available, is the March Harvard-Harris poll. That poll, in which Trump has a small lead over Biden in a hypothetical 2024 matchup, has Trump carrying the working class vote by 10 points. Now, I'm here to tell you this, my friend. If, and I don't think it's going to be, but if the November election is down to Biden versus Trump, Trump is going to win a lot bigger than the polls are saying. Maybe not a landslide, but it's going to be big. So then Liberal Patriot said, in a DeSantis-Biden matchup, DeSantis has a similar lead over Biden and an identical 10-point advantage among working-class voters. There's a slightly more recent Quinnipiac poll that also includes these 2024 matchups, but the public materials only provide a white college-non-college split. Earlier polls from this year, where data are available, replace this pattern of Trump and DeSantis leading Biden among working class voters." So there you have it. I mean, Trump's a winner. And the other side knows this. They know that Trump is a winner, so they're going to really ramp up their efforts to prevent him from being able to run. There will be more litigation against him, and I maintain there will be an attempt to assassinate him. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Andrew Rose.
Thank you all for being here. I'm so excited for this. I am. It's a lot of fun getting to do comedy. I love it. I love it. I haven't always been a comedian, obviously. I was a cook for 15 years. That's the right? It's the one thing I'm good at other than being like mildly funny, which you just proved. And I love it. I love being a cook. I've learned a lot of things. Like, one, women, you're a lot like grills. I don't know if you know this. You're hot. I'm not really sure how to turn you on. And if you don't pay enough attention to them, they will burn your house down. So there's that. But the other thing that I learned, which I feel is more important, is if a Hispanic guy asks you to tell another Hispanic guy something in Spanish, don't. It will not end well for you. I learned so quickly that dude's name was not Señor Pendejo. Like, it was not a fun day. But I actually got to go to culinary school, and part of my culinary schooling, I got to go to Finland. And when I was in Finland, I had to take a language class. Now, the language class I had to take was called Intro to Finnish. Yeah, it's an oxymoron, right? We're walking into class like, are we learning to start to stop or stop to start? It doesn't make any sense. But I learned the language a little bit, mentioned that to this woman at a bar. She said, well, tell me something in Finnish. I said, not a problem. She said, what does that mean? I said, what that means is, girl, there's nothing I'd rather do than lay here and gaze into your eyes because they're as captivating as the Northern Lights. Smooth, right? And, I know how to play the game. And she was like, really? And I was like, no. I go, what it really means is high, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, Northern Lights. It's an intro class. I'm not supposed to learn everything. Come on. But I graduated culinary school and started working at Whole Foods shortly thereafter. And anyone here shop at Whole Foods? Yeah, I'm not surprised. If you did, you couldn't afford tickets. I understand. That place is dumb expensive. It is so bad. Like, each grape is about $14.95. You go, I need a head of lettuce. They're like, you're going to have to refinance. Like, it is bad. And there's a lot of crazy people that shop there. I call them crazy. Y'all call them vegans. And are there any vegans here? Yeah?
You're saying.
No. I'm just making sure. You'll tend not to like the good things in life, so I'm shocked that you're here. I'm joking. I'm joking. Listen, you live your life, be happy. It does not affect me, so I honestly do not care. But just letting you know, I'm never going to have as good a relationship with you as I ever will with bacon. Just not going to happen.
You get out there and make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.